Expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, welcome to tonight's edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. We're here tonight, and we're going to discuss a very important question facing America today. Many people realize today that something is very wrong with our money. Precisely what is wrong remains largely undefined in most people's minds, because there's been no meaningful public debate on monetary fundamentals in this country for more than half a century. Thus, the public has been denied crucial knowledge of how our system is supposed to work and what has gone wrong. Instead, we've been fed through the schools and the media disinformation concocted by the very people who led us into the verge of trouble. Our show topic tonight is Central Banking, A New World Order, and our very special guest is Dr. Edwin Vieira, who holds 4 degrees from Harvard, a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD, and a law degree. He has successfully argued or briefed cases leading to landmark decisions at the United States Supreme Court. He has written numerous monographs and articles in scholarly journals, and has written a book on money called The Pieces of Eight, The Monetary Powers and Disabilities of the United States Constitution. It is the most comprehensive study in the existence of American monetary law and history viewed from a constitutional perspective. So with me tonight is Dr. Edwin Vieira. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am. My pleasure to be with you.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. This is our continuing series entitled The War on Reason. And there's no way we can address that subject fully without looking at the core of what makes a society operate efficiently, effectively, and honestly. And if you don't have an honest money system, you can't do those things that a healthy society would want to be able to do. So tonight we're going to talk about the American monetary system, and I don't know of anyone better to do that with than you. So thank you very much for being here. Let's start with the question of what is money?
Well, basically, money is a medium of exchange. It serves the function of simplifying and making more efficient transactions in society. Otherwise, your alternative would be to barter one good or service for another. And that's a very cumbersome process, because what you have to barter, you may not be able to find someone else who wishes to exchange at that moment. And money serves an intermediate role. It allows you to sell a particular good or service now, to hold money in what the economists call a cash balance, until the particular good or service that you eventually want to have comes on the market, or you find it at the price that you're willing to pay. So it's a method for making market transactions more efficient, and it's really a method for making market transactions highly rational, because as soon as you have a monetary economy, monetary prices are generated. And these prices tell people what the value of goods and services are. They tell entrepreneurs and capitalists and workers which areas of production they should go into and which areas of production they shouldn't, because of the profitability or unprofitability of those areas. So that directs resources into the areas that are most useful to society. And money provides the mechanism for doing all of that.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. We're back now at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with our special guest, Dr. Edwin Vieira. And while some stations take a break from our broadcast, we will continue our discussion. So let's pick up on that point.
Are you prepared for a chemical, biological, or nuclear attack on America? Are you prepared for a major natural disaster? Well, how would you feed your family if the grocery stores were empty and you couldn't get supplies? The United States is at war today, and millions of people throughout the world would love to see this country destroyed, so you should prepare for an attack. Let me suggest you contact Ready Made Resources at 800-627-3809. That's 800-627-3809, and purchase a catalog. They have a 2-week supply of Alpine Air freeze-dried food. That's 3 meals a day for 2 people for 14 days for only $298. And if you mention you heard about the offer here on Radio Liberty, you'll get a 10% discount, which means that every meal costs a little over $3. So call 800-627-3809. The 150-page catalog costs $5, but you get your money back if you purchase a product, so why not give them a call right now?
Are you one of the millions who have trouble waking up every morning? Hit the snooze a few too many times? Need that morning cup of coffee to get you started? Why not put a little spice in your morning with Gano Cafe? Gano Cafe, a healthy coffee, gives you energy and vigor, increases your focus and mental clarity. Gano Cafe helps the body heal itself, strengthen the immune system, and waste elimination for detoxification. If you're a coffee drinker, you won't believe the wonderful taste of this great coffee. Ganoderma, commonly known as the reishi mushroom, has been utilized in Chinese medicine for over 2,000 years. Also known as the longevity herb, miraculous king of herbs, it's more powerful than ginseng and has much lower caffeine and acid. To get your cup of great-tasting coffee, go to healthycoffeeonline.com or call 1-888-841-6055. That's 1-888-841-6055.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
And with that, let's keep talking about where we are and what this introduction has to do with America today.
Well, where we are is essentially in the terminal phase of politicization of the monetary system. We go back to the beginnings of the United States as a political entity. We're talking, of course, of the formation of the Constitution. In the late 1700s, 1787, 1789, that period. And the founding fathers had had a fair amount of experience with both paper currencies and what economists used to call hard currencies, that is, silver and gold coinage systems. They'd had that experience during the colonial period and during the War of Independence. And one of the things they had learned, certainly during the War of Independence, was that the paper money system, or what they called in those days bills of credit generated by governments, was a very unstable system both economically and politically. And it led to grave difficulties during the War of Independence itself and immediately thereafter. A tremendous amount of economic instability, political and social instability resulting from it. So when the Constitution was drafted, they were very careful. And again, we have to remember that these were people who had this experience themselves. When they were in the Continental Congress, many of the founding fathers were in favor of using paper currency during the War of Independence, and they learned their lesson. Perhaps one of the few examples of where a large political leadership class really learned its lesson from some bad things that it did. In any event, during the Constitutional Convention, they came to the conclusion that they had to remove from the powers of government, both at the state level and at what they called the general government, the national level, what's called the federal government today, at that level, the ability to generate governmental paper currencies. And they did that in two ways. They took the power away from the states to emit bills of credit, and they failed to give power to Congress, or they refused, I should say, because it was proposed, to give that power to emit bills of credit to Congress. And they removed that proposal from the table. So if you read the Constitution in light of the debates that describe what went on, and certainly in light of the previous history, it was clear that neither the federal government nor the state governments were to exercise any power to generate a governmental paper currency. The governmental monetary system was to be based upon silver and gold, the unit being the silver Spanish mill dollar, so-called piece of eight. That's where the title of my book derives. Pieces of eight were the Spanish dollars that circulated in the colonies, and that was the unit with which the colonial merchants and others in the free markets were most familiar, and that was the one that was adopted on the recommendation of Thomas Jefferson. Most people don't realize that, but Jefferson recommended that during the Continental Congress, and Jefferson and Hamilton, when they were both in Washington's administration, one of the few things they agreed on was that monetary system of gold and silver coinage based on the silver dollar as the unit. So that's where the system started, and it was intended to depoliticize money, not to allow the government to manipulate what the substance of money was going to be by generating some kind of paper currency, especially a paper currency that would not be redeemable in gold or silver coin, and then to generate a great deal of that so you would have inflation, which they had seen, founding fathers had seen in tremendous amounts during the War of Independence, so they were very familiar with that. So to limit the government, to depoliticize money, the only money that the government would be allowed to use would be free market money, gold and silver coinage. And the government's only connection to that coinage was that the mints would stamp it. And the reason that they wanted to do that and allowed that to happen was because a stamp on a coin is a certification of its content.
Really, a best housekeeping seal of approval.
Essentially, that's right. It makes the coins circulate that much more easily. Then people don't have to test them in some way, chemically or otherwise, to determine what their content is. And it was believed at the time that if the government were limited to that function of taking gold and silver from the market, and in those days anyone could bring his gold and silver to the market and have it coined essentially at cost, so there'd be no loss to him, the government would put its stamp on that coin. $1 was going to contain 371 and a quarter grains of silver, and they had another set of gold coins, which were called eagles, and they had specific weights. You would know, based upon the stamp on that coin, what its content was, and that would then facilitate free market transactions.
Well, those of us who believe in the institution of a legitimate government certainly would be hard-pressed to argue that government doesn't have a role in weights and measures.
And just
the facts, thank you.
The weights and measure provision is right there next to the coinage provision in the Constitution itself. So that's the way the founders were looking at it. And that, of course, had been the history of Anglo-American law going back as far as you want to go to the first time that coins appeared in Britain. So that was the initial plan. Now, there was not to be an outlawry, if you will, of all paper money. Private banks were to be allowed to generate paper currencies because paper currencies ultimately are simply debt instruments of the bank. It puts these things out, and if people want to circulate them in the private market, of course, that's their own business, and they take the risk, as it were.
But that bank has to have something standing behind.
Yeah, that's right. And if it doesn't make good on its notes, if it doesn't pay them on demand, or depending on what the terms may be, and on demand or monthly or whatever, then the bank is subject to, of course, bankruptcy proceedings or charges for contract violation or fraud or what have you, depending on the culpability of its officers. But that was to be the division. The free market might generate other forms of currency through private banks or other instrumentalities, and they'd be subject to the laws of commerce and the laws of fraud. And the governments at the state and national level were solely performing this night watchman function, if you will, of certifying that the coinage contained gold or silver to a particular weight. Now, that's the point at which politicization begins to come in. And really it's in the person of Alexander Hamilton here, if you will, picking one particular famous founding father. He was very concerned about bringing the financial powers in the marketplace into some kind of symbiotic or relationship or partnership, political partnership, if you will, with the government. He thought that was the best way to stabilize the government, and those were the people that you wanted to be in an influential position. And the way he saw to do this was to create some kind of governmentally chartered bank. So you had the first Bank of the United States that Hamilton proposed and was finally put in. The states did the same type of thing, and for the same reason.
Excuse me, but basically you're saying that in an era, a political era, where the separation of business and government was very clear in the minds of most of the founders' heads, we had at least Alexander Hamilton suggesting the first public-private partnership, and it had to do with money.
With money, that's right. That's where this thing came in.
And of course, today, that's what we're seeing.
We see it in many, many other areas.
In everything.
I mean,
from land use to parenting to everything else, now it's suddenly a federal state or a federal-private partnership or a federal NGO partnership. So we've taken this model that began early in the nation's history of privatizing, if you will, for the benefit of some insiders. Money, we now do that with most all of our human activities as we accelerate that in this period of time very rapidly through all sectors of our society. But let's get back to the money dynamic.
Okay, well, and you see that's an extrapolation of that idea. And the reason it came in first was the old rule, follow the money, right? This was a way of creating a partnership between rich people in the private sector and politicians. And Hamilton saw, as it were, the percentages in it, if you will. And as I say, it also occurred at the state level. Well, the first bank in the United States was highly controversial. It eventually, its charter ran out and it wasn't renewed. Then a second bank in the United States was put in, and most people were aware that Andrew Jackson, when he was president, was decidedly against this public-private partnership concept, especially in the area of banking, because that kind of a public-private partnership is a way to redistribute wealth generally to the disadvantage of most people in society. And so Jackson fought the second bank of the United States. Its charter was not renewed. So for a period of time from the mid-1830s up until the Civil War, there was no governmentally chartered national bank or what we would call today a kind of central bank mechanism. There was nothing of that kind. There were state-chartered banks. Many of them had very bad experiences in terms of they were run into the ground economically. So there was, in this country, the idea of separation of bank and state was still something that I would say a majority of the people were in favor of, and certainly at the national or the federal level, it was the ruling ethos of the time. Comes the Civil War, and again, follow the money is the rule. The Union Congress was facing a very serious problem. He had the secession of the southern states, this war that began. How were they going to finance it? And taxation, at least initially, was out of the question because the war was not terrifically popular politically. So they were afraid to raise taxes to the really astronomical levels at that time that they would have needed to finance the war. So they took two steps, critical steps. Number one, they generated the first governmental paper currency since before the Constitution, the so-called greenbacks. Governmental paper money, irredeemable in gold, and legal tender, which meant that everyone had to take them in trade. So that was the first thing, putting the government into the paper money business. The second thing was the creation of the so-called national banking system. This, again, was a private-public partnership. And if you read the legislative debates on it, the proponents of the national bank come right out and say that. They say precisely, this is what we're doing. We want the financially powerful people, the financially elite group in this country, to be on board with the government, to be in a partnership with us in the generation of paper currency. So they gave people, private parties, the opportunity to buy government bonds and then to use those bonds as the basis for generating their own private banknotes. So you had two streams now of paper currency coming out that were sanctioned by the national government, one directly from the Treasury, the greenbacks, and the other indirectly from the Treasury through the purchase of bonds, but coming out through private banks.
We'll be right back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz to keep this rolling. Welcome back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio station. And again, we're going to carry on our conversation with Dr. Edwin Viara right through this commercial break for some stations. And what we've got is clearly is this combination of financial interests with political interests.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
When was the last time you used pure soap? I mean real hard-to-find, all-natural pure soap that contains no dyes, perfumes, deodorant, or antibacterials? Probably never, right? For the past 50 years, the Calbend Soap Company has been making triple-concentrated pure soaps exclusively for healthcare professionals and hospitals. Now, for the first time, Calbend Pure Soap is available factory-direct to you and your family. It's great news because Calbend Pure Soap is made from all-natural ingredients, is earth-friendly, and completely environmentally safe. So if you want yesterday's values today, for good old-fashioned pure soap, call Calbend at 1-800-340-7091.
Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbend Pure Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091. Or on the web at calbendpuresoap.com.
Try pure soap once, and I guarantee you'll never use anything else.
Want to look good and feel great? Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Well, there are things you can do and natural products available that are strong and safer than harsh synthetics. Rediscover ancient secrets with therapeutic grade A essential oils. The molecular structure of essential oils is highly oxygenating in nature, increasing vitality and energy to the body. Our essential oils and supplements are all natural and absolutely pure to help you discover optimal health, essential nutrition, emotional well-being, and effective weight management. Whether using our products or looking for a home-based business, you'll be glad you contacted us by calling 1-800-993-OILS. Therapeutic grade essential oils are emerging as the missing link to modern medicine. That's 1-800-993-6457. You can also visit our website at www.naturesoils.org. That's www.naturesoils.org.
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
With respect to money, the Federal Reserve in this country came in 1913, and he's described how counterfeit works to the disadvantage of the last guy in the line who's holding fake money, but there are beneficiaries in between. And he likens that to the Federal Reserve System in that money is simply created out of air, and the loser is the society that is affected adversely by inflation, which of course is most citizens, and the gainers are the first ones in the cycle of the use of that newly created money. Let me ask you this question, Ed. What's the dynamic for the Federal Reserve and its members itself with respect to the creation of this money, which comes out of the banking system? Is there...
You have to remember, the Federal Reserve is a very complicated organization. And it's a pyramidal structure. You have the Board of Governors at the top. They're appointed by the President, confirmed by the Senate. And then right below the Board of Governors, there are 12 regional Federal Reserve banks. And then below them, as members of those federal, or stockholders, as they call them, of those Federal Reserve banks, are thousands and thousands of so-called member banks, which are private banks. They're national or state banks that are owned by private parties. And those are the folks that, as it were, are making something off of this deal in the private area, because the whole system is designed to float their currency and to provide credit to the currency that the system generates. The ultimate credit is provided by the Treasury of the United States, because the statute that authorizes the emission of Federal Reserve notes says they will be redeemed in lawful money at Federal Reserve banks or at the Treasury of the United States. So if the banks were to fail to pay, then the Treasury would have to pay. That is, the people of the United States would have to pay. So the theory here is that the Treasury has, in essence, or Congress passed a statute, has in essence loaned the credit of every American to this banking cartel. And theoretically, if the banking cartel is run improperly or negligently or incompetently or what have you, and it collapses, then the full burden of the loss falls onto the taxpayers. That's a nice deal if you can get it.
Heads I win and tails you lose?
Yeah. But you see, that goes back to Hamilton's principle of making this partnership between the political sector and the financial sector. And the financial sector was clever enough to say, well, we don't only want a partnership. We want to be bailed out. We want to guarantee that if we lose everything, you're going to pick up the loss. You and the political sector will pick up the loss. And the political sector says, fine, because the banking system enables the political sector to, as the expression goes, monetize public debt. So the government can turn around when it wants to spend for some new program. It doesn't have to go to the taxpayers and ask for unpopular taxes. It can go to the banking system and say, oh, here are some public debts that we're going to generate, and we want you to buy these public debts directly and put new money in our checking account, our governmental checking account, so that we can spend for this program or that program. Now, the average person who sees taxes increase, he doesn't like that, but the average person doesn't understand how the burden of public debt functions as against him, and how it harms society probably much more than taxes does, or the taxes do. Because taxes, you know what the burden is, you know when it has to be paid off. This public debt concept is one that constantly puts off to the future generations, the ultimate payment of the debt. That's how you can have a multi-trillion dollar debt. It's because the person today doesn't feel that as a burden. We're paying the interest on it, but the ultimate principal payment, who knows when that's going to come due, and who knows who's going to pay it. And that's the frightening part about it from a political point of view, that you're putting off on future generations a burden as to which they have had no say whatsoever. You want to talk about taxation without representation. The piling on of essentially infinite debt must be worse from a philosophical and moral point of view. Because these folks that are coming down, my children and my children's children, they've had absolutely nothing whatsoever to say, and they're going to be born into a society that will have $15, $20, $30 trillion worth of governmental debt, unpayable debt.
How is it that the society, and we're going to come up on another break here in about a minute, but how is it that society lost its ability to trade with straight money, gold and silver coin? How do we get in the predicament where our money system and really our future, in the political context at least, as you just described, is now made dependent upon a system we have no control over?
It was the fault of the system. All right, that's the real quirk here. It was the fault of the Federal Reserve System. If you go back to 1913, 1914, when the system came into effect, passed at the end of 1913, Federal Reserve notes were originally redeemable in gold coin. They no longer are.
And we'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with our guest tonight discussing the Federal Reserve and constitutional banking. Our guest, Dr. Edwin Vieira. And let's continue with that.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
People often ask me what they can do about what's happening in America, and I tell them what you want to do is tell the most carefully kept secret in America and let people understand that America was founded as a Christian nation. It was founded by Christians on Christian principles. Of course, this is not taught in our schools, it's not taught in our seminaries, it's not taught in our universities, and certainly never mentioned by the controlled media. But you can help us to get the truth out about America's Christian heritage by setting up an institute on the Constitution in your home, in your church, in your neighborhood. Call the Institute and the Constitution at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And ask about setting up an Institute of the Constitution. It's 12 programs. Everything's there on the video. All you have to do is, of course, get a group together. Call the Institute and the Constitution at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. Everything's there on the video. All you have to do is get a group together. Get involved. Help us save America.
Want to look good and feel great? Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Well, there are things you can do and natural products available that are strong and safer than harsh synthetics. Rediscover ancient secrets with therapeutic grade A essential oils. The molecular structure of essential oils is highly oxygenating in nature, increasing vitality and energy to the body. Our essential oils and supplements are all natural and absolutely pure to help you discover optimal health, essential nutrition, emotional well-being, and effective weight management. Whether using our products or looking for a home-based business, you'll be glad you contacted us by calling 1-800-993-OILS. Therapeutic-grade essential oils are emerging as a missing link to modern medicine. That's 1-800-993-6457. You can also visit our website at www.naturesoils.org. That's www.naturesoils.org.
Well, I want to tell you a little bit about the Miracle-2 soap products, which we carry at Radio Liberty. Now, we can't make any medical claims for them, but we will tell you that many of the people who use these products do make claims and tell us how the wonderful, wonderful things it's done for them. There is a soap, there is a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizing solution, which some people claim seems to help them as far as their gastric upset, their heartburn is concerned. Well, I can tell you that I've used these products for about a year now, and I'm very, very happy with them. My wife uses them, and many of our listeners use them. In fact, we have a large number of people who got started using these, and they have so many uses. If you'd like to find out what the Miracle-2 soap products can do, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-R. We'll send you the manufacturer's brochure, and of course, if you'd like to order, we have a special introductory offer. Call 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Miracle-2 products.
The Second Depression since the establishment of the Federal Reserve in 1913, and the system of the Federal Reserve was sold to the citizenry as the methodology which would end depressions and inflation. And instead, right. Of course, we've had booms and busts all along, and we've had massive amounts of inflation, which Dr. Vieira is describing really started to set sail in the 1950s. And with that, let's proceed.
Well, Lyndon Johnson's inflation during the Vietnam War period was so great that when Nixon came in, Nixon had to stop international payments of gold in redemption of Federal Reserve notes. So you see the sequence. And the sequence was not, gold was to back the Federal Reserve note. That was supposed to give us stability. The Federal Reserve system was inherently unstable, led to the Depression. Roosevelt comes in, and instead of changing the system in the direction of stability, he makes it more unstable by removing gold domestically from the system. Johnson comes in, spends a huge amount of terrific inflation, and Nixon now, instead of taking the right action to make the system stable, he makes it more unstable by removing the international payments of gold. So now we have, on the one hand, the Federal Reserve note, which is irredeemable in gold. You could still get silver with it for a while. Johnson actually removed that, 67 to 68. So by the time Nixon has taken this action in 1971, you now have the first time in American history that there is a paper currency generated by this cartel, private-public partnership, which is totally irredeemable in anything of value. All right? It's a promise to pay for which the government will pay you nothing, except another piece of paper. Well, this is a kind of unprecedented situation in world history, but it seems to be chugging along because fundamentally people don't understand the inherent instability and danger in it. And that's what we're facing now is once you have a system that is not tied to the monetary system, banking system, not tied to the market, that has no requirement that the bank's circulating currency be redeemed in anything necessarily other than another piece of circulating currency. You know, change a five for five ones, change two tens for two fives. But you have no connection to gold or silver, as was the history of paper currencies before 1971, going all the way back to the Bank of England and even back into even some earlier banks. Now there is no anchor or limitation on the expansion of the currency system, because the banks don't ever have to worry about redeeming that currency with anything. So they can expand as much as that public-private partnership wants to.
Well, and what we get from that, it seems to me, you talked about Lyndon Johnson and the massive spending during his presidency. Well, that was in large part to make war. And yet we move forward to today where, in large part, that extra spending that is manufactured out of the air, as you, I think you're describing it, is spent on not just war, but on buying up all the resources across this land from the citizen owners and putting it into, again, public-private partnerships with the money that is created by a public-private partnership. Pretty soon, we're all going to become vessels of a public-private partnership, it seems to me, if that pattern continues.
I would say that that's the tenor or goal of any one of these paper money machines. I mean, if you run them out to their logical conclusion, theoretically, the man in control of the paper money machine can gain ownership of all private property because he can buy it up.
Well, and that's really, you know, if we reflect on age-old political adages, I mean, as old as Isaiah, the notion that all the people's riches can be gathered if you simply blur the boundaries and raid the public treasury. And a system of paper money allows you to raid the public treasury while you go ahead and politically blur the boundaries and gather up all the riches. And that's why citizens, going back to our conversation with Dr. Michael Kaufman, that's why our conversation ends with the notion on that subject that if you're approached as an American landowner or resource owner with a government-private partnership offer for free money in exchange for a conservation easement, you simply turn it down. It's gotten to the point where our failure, our refusal to participate in these public-private partnerships is becoming essential in order to avert victory against reason. And, of course, that's what our series is focusing on.
And you notice in this system that the key to the thing is the ability of the public-private partnership group to come into the market with this purchasing power, if you will, this new money. How, if you didn't have the banking system providing this new money out of nothing, would the public-private partnership or simply the government have to raise the funds? Well, it would have to go to the taxpayers. And then it would have to lay on the table why they needed this money. There has to be a program. We need to raise so much money through taxation to do the following things. And one could imagine that most of these things we're talking about would not prove to be very popular. People would not be willing to pay the exorbitant levels of taxation to achieve these New World Order goals. But the average person doesn't understand that money is being generated through the banking system, or the way it's being generated, the consequences of its being generated. And, of course, then the government's able to enter the market, or the public-private partnership is able to enter the market with this purchasing power without the onus of having to satisfy the taxpayers of the justification of the program to begin with. It's fascinating because it really undermines not only the ultimate result, but it undermines the whole democratic process, the whole process of representative government, because once you allow the government and these government public-private partnerships to be independent of having to come back to the taxpayers
with some justification for what they're doing, then the taxpayers become irrelevant. Well, the voters become irrelevant. The bureaucracy is the only thing that counts anymore. The bureaucracy and the banks.
Well, here in Santa Cruz is an example of the country, because our model is going across the country pursuant to the federal government's commitment to sustainable policies. But we have 400 tax-funded nonprofits in this town. We have deficits at the state level, deficits at the local level, deficits at the federal level, and nobody cares. Everyone lines up within this dependency line to take the public-private partnership monies, the grant funds that are sweeping all aspects of how community living is arranged here. So it's much more than the economic dynamic for future generations. It is now to the point, as you've suggested, that the voter becomes irrelevant, the elected representative becomes irrelevant. It all becomes irrelevant because it gets a life of its own, feeding off this system of money that is handing itself out in exchange for compliance to the new world order.
And I don't think that it was any accident, if you go back historically, that the debate with Jefferson and Hamilton over the first Bank of the United States really talked in these terms. And that was Jefferson's point, that you cannot set up this kind of a system without having these kinds of consequences. He didn't foresee what we are now experiencing in particular. But in terms of the general principle, he understood it. And Hamilton, of course, was on the other side because he wanted the particular result. I don't think he ever foresaw what's happening today or would have been particularly in favor of it, what's happening today. But he was interested in the immediate political goal of creating this partnership between the financial interests and the political interests, because he wanted to stabilize a strong central government. Jefferson saw the ultimate consequence, that government would become essentially a tool of these powerful private interests. And the powerful private interests, because they were controlling wealth redistribution, would ultimately become the governing body of the country, even though they never stood for election. And that's what we see. And the politicians now are essentially puppets. And the strings are attached back to the banking system, the financial system, and the people that are in control of those entities.
Well, and certainly that has its effect. If people say, well, not every politician is controlled by the banking system, but it happens through the operation of the political machinery, the Democrat and Republican parties, for which you cannot get elected to their nominations without the party's money. And of course, the party's money is tied to the existence of the banking system.
Yeah, I think you have to look at, I don't like the word trend, but you look at the direction in which things are going. And please don't tell me that these politicians are not, in some sense, controlled. They may not understand the element of control that controls them, right? They may not be conscious of the control. They may be, as in a sense, victims or manipulated in the same way a puppet is manipulated, doesn't understand, or a marionette is manipulated, and doesn't understand who's pulling those strings. But the fact is that they continue to propose and vote for and put into effect these programs that are moving essentially in a kind of conveyor belt in one direction. And the direction is the direction that is, if not dictated, it's certainly desired by the upper levels of the financial establishment.
Well, and I think what you've got is that one direction coming from two thrusts. You've got on one side the so-called libertarian privatizer, the public-private partner third way machinery that so many libertarian organizations propel. And on the other side, you've got the socialists behind the green movement. Their words sound warm and fuzzy, and they attract a lot of people who aren't socialists, but the political dynamic of the left-wing socialist and the right-wing privateer combines the same end, which is to that end which propels this funny money system toward a takeover of the citizens' property.
Well, there's another term here. It comes out to what I would call classical fascism. It's a fascist system. The theoretical fascist system was based upon the concept of the public-private partnership. That's what it was. It was the alternative to socialism, in which government controls all production on the one hand, and the absolute free market, in which government has nothing to do with production, and production is all controlled by private entities. Fascism was the middle structure and said, wait a minute, we can't have either one of those. We want a system where the powerful private groups, the efficient private groups, interact in a symbiotic relationship, a partnership relationship with the government, and determine not only economic policy, but political policy. In the classic fascist system, they even had a House of Representatives, if you will, that was made up of representatives of the private entities. All right? And Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, set that kind of a system up here in this country in 1933, the National Industrial Recovery Act. If you lay the National Industrial Recovery Act down next to any theoretical structure of fascism, that is theoretical fascism, it's the same thing. Now, the funny point, or perhaps funny isn't the word, the peculiar point is, that structure is the structure of the Federal Reserve System. It's the structure of the National Industrial Recovery Act. It's the structure of Mussolini's fascist system. It's the structure of theoretical fascism. The Federal Reserve System is fascism in money. And that has spread throughout the economy because it's a driving force.
Well, it's throughout
money
the world.
Exercises so much control.
And it's throughout the world.
That's right, yeah, and throughout the world. And you will see, their goal at some stage is to set up a world Federal Reserve type system. It's very difficult to do because it would generate a certain amount of instability just to create one and say, here it is, we're going to use it. Now, I mean, it has to be done in a gradual sense. The Bretton Woods system for a while had the United States Federal Reserve as the world central bank. The instabilities of the system have now made the United States Federal Reserve probably not the best instrument. You have the European Union, and now you have, of course, the Chinese in Asia. But I think the overall plan is to set up a world system, world monetary system, that looks a lot like the Federal Reserve, except it will be outside of the control of any particular country.
It'll be, again, global rather than national, extremely powerful private interests combining their power, their economic power, with the force of government on a global level.
And it will be supported by the United Nations or whatever is the body of the time and the major countries, because it will promise to monetize the debts of these political entities. And then, of course, all of these political entities will be subject to that entity in the same way. You look at the Federal Reserve System and the terrific power that it exercised over the years, let's say, in North and South America. Why? Because the currencies of Central America, Mexico, the South American countries were really rotting vegetable currencies. They were very poor currencies. Compared to them, the Federal Reserve note currency was a hard currency. So all of those countries in their financial dealings had to pretty much dance to the tune that the Federal Reserve and the financial centers in the United States, primarily New York, called. And the same thing would be true if you had an international, global Federal Reserve System. Then the United States would be in the same position with respect to that as Argentina is with respect to the United States today. That system would then really have global hegemony.
Well, let me ask this question. Is there any place in the world that is not part of this type of paper money system?
Well, they all have paper money systems of their own, and they're all interlocked in one way or another.
I mean the monetary system that is only backed by a governmental promise.
Yeah, no, and the answer is no, unless you go into the marketplace and look at some of these private currencies that are now developing. Go on to the internet and find places like Gold Money or e-gold and so forth, where they're using a gold unit that's exchangeable over the internet. And it is not a paper currency by any stretch of the imagination. It's an absolute gold unit. The only difference between it and the coin is that it transfers electronically.
Before we get to that, let me ask you this question, too.
Sure.
What effect, you know, for some people, understanding the political dynamic of a paper money system backed only by the promise of government on the backs of its citizens, what besides the political and the obvious economic instabilities, what effect does it have on the social structure of a nature? In your beautiful pamphlet called Why Does the United States Need Constitutional Money, which I recommend for anyone out there, and particularly for high school teachers, because this document is the perfect document that for every 15-year-old in America to read. You know, it's something that, 45-year-olds might have a hard time understanding, but a 15-year-old with a clear mind would understand this very readily because it applies straight to common sense and pure reasoning. How can somebody get that and then come back and answer the question about the hedonistic effects of paper money in our society?
Well,
we've got 1 minute till our break.
Sure. They can obtain this by just asking me for one. Post Office Box 3634, Manassas, Virginia, 20108.
Okay, that's P.O. Box 3634, Manassas, M-A-N-A-S-S-A-S,
right.
Virginia, 22110.
20108.
Sorry, 20108.
Anyway, just ask for the Why Does the United States Need Constitutional Money pamphlet, and I'll have one of those sent out.
Okay, well, for the listeners out there, this is something you really do want to take a look at. It's pamphlet size, 45 or so pages, and we're going to be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with our special guest, Dr. Edwin Viara. We're back for our last few minutes at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio station with Dr. Edwin Viara. And while some stations are on a commercial break, let's continue and talk about the social effects that come with a monetary system such as the United States.
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Fight Father Time with Cocoon GH. This advanced growth hormone spray delivers impressive results. Listen to what 51-year-old Gail Contax experienced while on Cocoon GH.
My eyesight was failing. My skin was sagging. I was losing muscle tone and my bones and joints were aching. I initially got started on a product called Ultimate HGH. I felt a little more energy for the first few weeks, but then I began to feel tired again. Then I heard an ad on Cocoon GH and gave a call. I learned that Ultimate HGH isn't even growth hormone. I started using Cocoon GH and the first thing I noticed was my aches and pains went away. After another few weeks, my energy came up, as did my strength and endurance. I'm getting a better night's sleep and waking up feeling rested. My muscle tone and my eyesight both improved after 1 month. My sex drive got stronger, and much to my surprise, my menopausal symptoms went away and my period came back. I'm impressed beyond belief. Thanks, Cocoon Nutrition.
Satisfaction guaranteed. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour,
$15 for 2 hours,
and $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. So order right, Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today because you can handle the truth.
Our consumption levels of the last century and the beginnings of this century. And this is happening while every agency of government is rapidly expanding their expenditure of funds so as to implement what I call the new world infrastructure of the post-private property era, or you live in government housing where resources are off limits to ordinary human beings, where your jobs are assigned and your transportation alternatives become increasingly limited as the attack on the automobile accelerates. And all of this made possible thanks to the partnership between large private interests and the central power of the federal or globalizing governments. What is it that citizens need to start thinking about in order to make some healthy transition from where we are to where we can be?
Well, for a healthy transition to take place, you're going to have to, if not change the present banking system, provide an alternative sound banking system so that the transition can take place. There's no way that this present system is going to be able to correct itself. It may not even be able to correct itself if there's a competitive system. It may just go under. Your perhaps bigger problem is looking at the possibility that a very serious economic crunch, give it whatever name you want, right? It could be hyperinflationary, it could be depressionary, there are all sorts of scenarios, but a very significant economic crunch is going to occur in the not-too-distant future, and what can people do there? I suppose the only answer is to begin to... number one, people have to get out of debt. The only, quote, personal salvation, unquote, from an economic point of view, is to be as debt-free as possible. And then to look at some alternatives in the area of currency, look at some of these private currencies and some of the other alternatives, because if you have a major crunch in the present banking system, look at what happened in the 30s as a good example. Many, many localities were driven to the creation of what they call private scrip, or local scrip, because some of it was generated actually by governmental entities, local governments, some of it was generated by business entities, because the banking system simply failed. It wasn't functioning anymore. So that's one thing that people have to potentially look at as a possibility, a failure of the banking system. You look at what happened in Argentina not too long ago, just a couple of years ago. The banks went into crisis. They shut down. They weren't allowing people to take money out. I don't know how the average Argentinian functioned under those circumstances. You had a number of those events. One happened in Maryland, one happened in Rhode Island, one happened in Ohio about 10 or 12 years ago when the state savings and loan systems collapsed. So there are recent precedents for this happening. It certainly is possible that it could happen at a national or even an international level. And the grave difficulty is, you remember during the 1930s or some of the earlier banking crises that we had in this country, when the banks collapsed, the monetary system didn't collapse because the banking system was based upon the gold and silver coin system. All the paper money the banks generated was supposedly redeemable in gold and silver. Of course, the banks weren't able to do it, and so that's why they went under. But the monetary system was still there. Now we have no underlying monetary system. There is no gold and silver coinage that's circulating. People have it, and they put it away in a strong box, a safe deposit box or whatever. But you don't see gold and silver coinage circulating the way it circulated in this country even prior to 1933. So if you had a major national or probably international monetary crisis, this country and the whole world might very well be left without any acceptable money. And imagine the consequences from an economic point of view, and then, of course, the social and political consequences that follow from a major breakdown. You look again at the 30s, you had the economic breakdown of the collapse of the stock market, and then, of course, the banks going under in 1931 and 1932. And as a result of that economic breakdown, there was a terrific social breakdown and political breakdown. Communists, fascists, every kind of crackpot political...
Every thug.
...came out of the woodwork.
Sure.
And then, of course, you had Roosevelt, and Roosevelt did more to drive this country away from constitutional government and in the direction of really all sorts of unsound. And Social Security wasn't the worst of them.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.